My name is Anna, and I'm an alcoholic. This is an open meeting of the Atlantic Group of Alcoholics Anonymous, and all are welcome to attend. It is our belief that our meeting structure is necessary to maintain the integrity of the group so that it may better carry the message of AA. And since the most important aspect of AA recovery is one alcoholic relating to another, only alcoholics participate. If your primary problem is other than alcoholism, we think it would also be helpful for you to contact an anonymous organization which more specifically deals with your addiction. Our literature persons, Phil and Dino, have the list of such groups with their phone numbers. In any case, we hope that what you learn here may be helpful to your recovery and/or understanding. Ashley will read the preamble.
Hi, I'm Ashley. I'm an alcoholic. The AA preamble. Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of men and women who share their experience, strength, and hope with each other that they may solve their common problem and help others to recover from alcoholism. The only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. There are no dues or fees for AA membership. We are self-supporting through our own contributions. AA is not allied with any sect, denomination, politics, organization, or institution. Does not wish to engage in any controversy, neither endorses nor opposes any causes. Our primary purpose is to stay sober and help other alcoholics to achieve sobriety.
Please join me in the Serenity Prayer. God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, courage to change the things I can, and wisdom to know the difference. Rich will read the steps.
Step one, we admitted we were powerless over alcohol, that our lives had become unmanageable. Step two, came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. Step three, made a decision to turn our will and lives over to the care of God as we understood him. Step four, made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. Step five, admitted to God, to ourselves, and to another human being the exact nature of our wrongs. Step six, we were entirely ready to have God remove all of our defects of character. Step seven, humbly asked him to remove our shortcomings. Step eight, made a list of all persons we had harmed and became willing to make amends to them all. Step nine, made direct amends to such people wherever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others. Step 10, continued to take a personal inventory, and we were wrong, promptly admitted it. Step 11, sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood him, praying only for knowledge of him, his will for us, and the power to carry that out. Step 12, having had a spiritual awakening as the result of these steps, we tried to carry this message to the alcoholics and to practice these principles in all of our affairs.
Alicia will read the traditions.
Hi, my name's Alicia and I'm an alcoholic. The 12 traditions. One, our common welfare should come first. Personal recovery depends upon AA unity. Two, for our group purpose, there is but one ultimate authority, a loving God as he may express himself in our group conscious. Our leaders are but trusted servants. They do not govern. Three, the only requirement for AA membership is a desire to stop drinking. Four, each group should be autonomous except in matters affecting other groups or AA as a whole. Five, each group has but one primary purpose, to carry its message to the alcoholic who still suffers. Six, an AA group ought never endorse, finance, or lend the AA name to any related facility or outside enterprise, lest problems of money, property, and prestige divert us from our primary purpose. Seven, every AA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. Eight, Alcoholics Anonymous should remain forever non-professional, but our service centers may employ special workers. Nine, AA as such ought never be organized, but we may create service boards or committees directly responsible to those they serve. 10, Alcoholics Anonymous has no opinion on outside issues, hence the AA name ought never be drawn into public controversy. 11, our public relation policy is based on attraction rather than promotion. We need always maintain personal anonymity at the level of press, radio, and films. 12, anonymity is a spiritual foundation of all our traditions, ever reminding us to place principles before personalities.
The format of this meeting is 2 10-minute speakers followed by our information break, and then our main speaker who will speak for 30 minutes. Our first 10-minute speaker is Mike M.
My name is Mike Morano. I'm an alcoholic. Very grateful to be here. It is absolutely an honor and a privilege to get the chance to actually speak at my home group and share at my home group tonight. I want to just take a moment and thank Jero for giving me the opportunity to come here, so thank you. I also, you know, want to thank everybody collectively that did service tonight. Obviously very nervous. So this is my home group. My sobriety date is October 15th, 2007. I have a sponsor. His name is Mike S. He has a sponsor. His name is James. James has a sponsor. His name is Bob. I spoke to Mike today. I know that Mike saw James today. And I sponsor one person. And I'm working on my 9-step amends. Not finished yet. And I practice steps 10 and 11 and 12. Speak into the microphone. My story is no different than anybody else. I've sat in plenty of meetings, and I think everybody in here knows how to drink and knows how to party. I'm not gonna delve too far into that. I just know it happened for me. I was 15, in the woods, just kind of hanging out, and I was like, I don't know, 4 or 5 guys, 2 girls, and they had natural ice beer. That was the first thing I ever drank. That first drink was my first drunk. I blacked out. I had a moment where I, you know, got sick in a church parking lot. And then when I woke up, they were driving around my neighborhood, and then they dropped me off. And I can just remember, I couldn't wait to do it again. You know, that was exactly how I felt right from the beginning. I went into my house. Everything was fine. I went downstairs. I went to sleep. And, it wouldn't be appropriate for me to stand here and tell you what I did do. It's more appropriate for me to tell you what I didn't do because I have everything in my story, everything. And everything I did alcoholically. I just didn't know that I did it alcoholically. And, I may have drank 10, 15 times, and I learned very quickly. Every time I drank, I blacked out. So it wasn't something I could do, so I did other things. And I'm going to breeze through this. I was 15. I came into AA 2 weeks before I turned 24. And I'll share with you my bottom. I'm laying in bed. It's a Saturday morning, it's like I kind of just woke up. And I have this 4-month-old baby. He's crying in the crib. I have my ex in the other room on the phone with her father begging him for money. And this thought goes through my mind that if the place were going to burn right now, I would not be able to get up to save his life. I never knew about meetings. I wound up shortly after that. Actually, it was funny. My first 12-step was a counselor for the company I was working for. And she said, what about meetings? I said, what are meetings? I had no idea. And off I went to a meeting. And, you know, I'll tell you, when I walked in here, I absolutely was dying. There's no question. And today that's not the case. I don't know why, you know, I haven't relapsed. I've stayed sober the whole time. That I don't really think that has anything to do with me. I got here. My first meeting was at the Gracie Square Detox. I wound up just being brought there. I wasn't in the detox, although I probably should have been in the detox. The great thing is that members of this group were at that detox bringing the message, and those people are in this room tonight. And it just shows me how this works. And still shaking. I was talked into going into rehab and into treatment about 45 days into my going to meetings, and I didn't want to do it, but I did, and I'm still here today. When I came out, the guy who was sponsoring me said, "I don't think you can hear me," and he said, "You know, let's find a sponsor," and I did. And we began to go through the work, as it's outlined in this book, Alcoholics Anonymous, and that was a great experience. And step one, I didn't know what an alcoholic was, and I only learned because people here taught me what an alcoholic really was. I didn't know I had an obsession of the mind. I didn't know I had a physical allergy or a spiritual malady. I had no idea. I didn't even understand the language. I knew nothing about what you guys were talking about. And I got to see very quickly. I had a lot of identification in Bill's story. And, you know, my first step, today when something happens and it's difficult, that's just life. And I don't think about taking a drink, and that's a result of the work. God, it wasn't too hard for me to believe that there was a power greater than myself, because I grew up with that God. I think the beard, the staff, the robe, I mean, that's what I grew up with. It was a vengeful God. But going through We Agnostics, I got to pick out my own conception of a higher power. And however limited that might have been when I had 3 or 4 months in this program, that worked for me, and it kept me sober, you know. And I'll never forget my third step. I did it right downstairs in this basement. And John said to me, he said, "All right, go get a few of your friends." And I went, and I did, and I went downstairs, and there must have been 30 people from this group. We got on our knees, and we said the third step, and he walked over to me, and he said, "Listen," he said, "you just loaded a gun in steps 1, 2, and 3. He said, "You just pulled the trigger." He said, "The bullet doesn't go backwards." He says, "I'm only going to know you took this third step when you go from 4 through 9. And that started my fourth step. And I was 35 pages long, 40 pages long. I went, I wrote it out, I got specific, and we went and I did the fifth step. And you know, my first fifth step, I've gone through the work twice. And, my first fifth step, I only had one real moment that I can recollect right now, and it was the moment where I accepted that I have a part in everything. And it was something where I really thought, like, I had him in a corner. I said, "Yeah, John, tell me where my part is in that." And he was awake. He was awake at the time. And he said to me, he said, "You know," he said, "when it happened, you had no part. The fact is, you've been holding on to this your whole life, and that's your part." He said, "You use this to separate you from the rest of the world and to make you uniquely different." And in 6 and 7, I had to ask, and I had to learn how to take opposite action. I don't know how to take opposite action. It's natural for me to be inconsiderate, to be dishonest, and all the things that I was when I first came in, and I got to do it. And I had the list when I did my fourth step, and I got to start making amends. And I think the best amends I made I was sitting there with my aunt making amends, and she said to me, "You know, how are you going to make amends to your grandfather? He passed away." And she's like, "You know, it's kind of hard to see him now." And I had a long talk about that with my current sponsor, Mike. And he had the greatest thing. I mean, this is the most beautiful thing about sponsorship, is no matter what I think, I know there's always something channeling through that. And he said, "Write a letter and go to the grave." And that's what I did. And I don't know what I got from that. You know, I heard a speaker talking about, three-dimensional actions and a fourth-dimensional result. And I'm getting the 1 minute sign. I just want to say that, that amends went really well. I got to read the letter. I burned the letter. And I don't know why I do those things, but I do those things because that's what was done before me. you know, and in steps 10, 11, and 12, I get to keep growing in understanding and effectiveness. And being a sponsor is, for me, is the greatest gift. It's the greatest gift, you know, and if you're new, just stay, you know, just stay. This is not, I am not here because of anything I have thought, I promise you. And I am only here by the grace of God and the people that came before me. So I want to thank you all for my sobriety.
Our second 10-minute speaker is Aviva.
Oh, my God. My name is Aviva, and I am an alcoholic. This is my home group. My sobriety date is August 23rd, 2008. My sponsor is Peggy, and she's also my life coach. And I'm working on steps 8 and 9. I'm dedicating what I'm going to say tonight to my parents. I'm hoping that with God and Alcoholics Anonymous, that I could be half the person that they were. They have really affected my life deeply. I knew when I drank that something happened to me. I drank at a very early age. It changed the way I felt. And the way I felt before I drank was that I was filled with terror. My parents are survivors of the Holocaust. I was born in Bergen-Belsen concentration camp after the war. I lived there for 3 years. I still get memory smells. And as a child, I was, unfortunately, the message I got was, don't trust, don't let anyone touch you, don't let anyone talk to you, be afraid. And I was afraid. I was so afraid that I couldn't chew food until I was 13. I had to have everything strained. So my life was very ridden with fear, and I really lived inside. When I picked up my first drink, that all changed. Something magical happened. I could talk to you. I could be with you. I could make myself sound funny. And so it remained. It's 10 minutes I have here, so I'm going to fast forward a lot, but I know today that how I drank was not normal drinking. Normal drinking people don't sew up their flies so that they can go out drinking. The way I thought was if I zipped up my fly and I came home and it was still zipped, then I was a good girl that night. Normal drinkers don't put ketchup on their arms and lay under a table so their husband could think they committed suicide. And so it goes. There were a lot of crazy stories, but all the while I was doing this, I really lived in terror, really thinking that I was crazy. I didn't know I had a disease. I didn't know that disease was alcoholism. Finally, my marriage ended, but in that marriage, the one gift that I got was my son, Sean, who really is the love of my life, and he is one of my heroes. And he unfortunately did have to go through watching his mother do a lot of crazy things and ultimately had to call 911 because I tried to take my life. So he saved me 3 times so far. He's 40 years old. I hope it's the last. And finally, I ended up in Smithers in 1980. It was the Billy Rose Mansion at the time. When I called up, I said, I just would like a room with a view, and how do we dress for dinner? And they put me in a room with 8 other women. Most of them had no teeth. And until I saw the families visiting them on Sunday and saw that they were just like my parents, but they had just fallen lower. and they just got off the elevator at a different time than I did. Anyway, I was the perfect smithereen. I was so excited to find out that I had a disease. I loved being sober. I loved, no matter what I'm, whatever you hear coming from here on in and whatever I've done, I love being sober in Alcoholics Anonymous. So I got out of Smithers, went to the workshop, raised my hand, did everything. Within 90 days, I picked up a drink. It went like that for 8 years. A lot of things happened to me in 8 years. I would come to meetings. I would sometimes have time. I would do service. I was once at Templeton. I was reading the secretary break. I had a bottle of little vodka in my pocket. The pocket had a hole in it. The bottle rolled down the aisle. But I just kept reading. Nobody in Alcoholics Anonymous told me to never come back. And it went like that. I mean, there were a lot of stories like that and a lot of people whose hands were out. Peggy was with me throughout this whole thing. And there, my son went to Alateen. He learned how to treat a sick alcoholic. I would come home from meetings and say, when he watched me put seltzer in my vodka after coming home from Lenox Hill, he said, what are you doing? And I said, well, they said if I mixed it with seltzer, it wouldn't count. So he looked at me. He knew better. And finally, one night, the pain, I asked God. I surrendered. I asked God, please, 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 God, help me. And he did. And for the next, 17, 18 years, I stayed sober. But looking back, I think I was abstinent. And so if your problem is alcohol, then abstinence is your solution. But if your problem is abstinence, then AA is your solution. And I think that being abstinent for as long as I was led me to my demise, almost. Well, the last 3 years of my drinking, I barely went to meetings. I certainly avoided every one of you. Peggy would say, we're saving a seat, we're saving a seat. I just would, call her when she wasn't home. That trick. And it got really bad. It got really bad. I kept slipping. I ended up in a few more rehabs, a few more detoxes. One detox towards the end, Stacy and Taylor brought me a meeting. When they walked in, I really thought I saw the eyes of God. It was just the most powerful thing. I got out of that rehab detox. I drank that night because my husband and I had a fight. And I still couldn't imagine at that point in time that my feelings wouldn't kill me. I thought if I had a feeling, I had to make it better. How do you make it better? You drink. I didn't know that. I forgot everything that I learned. I forgot it. It just kept getting worse and worse. And how it ended up was with Myra and Bonnie and Vince coming to my house along with a couple of other people. Coming to my house one night, I had been unable to stop drinking. I had written myself off. I wasn't in denial. I just had surrendered to dying. So they came to my house to try to intervene, to try to get me yet back to the detox. And the night before, I was so desperate. I tried to drink vodka, and the bottle broke, and it didn't matter. I was crawling on my hands and knees, and I was licking the floor, not caring if there was glass in my mouth. This is for a woman who was sober for almost 19 years. Didn't matter what yesterday's meeting I went to. It didn't matter what years I had. It only mattered that I walked away from my God. Because I believe that if I hadn't left him, then this might not have happened. But I left God about 3 years ago, very, very gently, very unawarely, And my troubles began really seriously. So I have my 1 minute sign. I will just tell you that when I got out of the treatment center that I ended up going to, I sent some vodka in a decorative pillow. I had my tailor sew some bottles in there so that it would be safe for when I got there, because I really wasn't yet surrendered. I really hadn't made up my mind. I was still doing half measures, and we know what that does. So the pillow never got completed in time for me to leave, because God had entered my life and he was taking hold. On my fourth day there, I fell to my knees and I remembered my prayer that I had said in 1988, which was, "Please God, help me." And he did. So I'm sober today. Thank you very much.
And our main speaker tonight is Steve.
Just got sized up for my microphone. I'm Steve Margarella, and I'm an alcoholic. And it's a treat and a privilege to be here. Thank you very much. I want to thank the group for having me. And I want to say to Phil that it's his first day. Yes, all our meetings are just like this. Perfect. I'm the guy that's going to entertain you for a few minutes until the elections. So you're just going to, like, I'm just a fill-in, you know, like. So I hope to have some fun. We're going to talk a little bit about the program, recovery, and I'm going to tell you a little bit about me and how I got here. You guys must be doing something right, because every time I come, this group just keeps getting bigger and bigger and bigger, you know. When I tell you I'm an alcoholic, I'm here to tell you that, for me, alcohol was more important than anything else in my life. Now, unlike many others, I did not come from a bad home. There was absolutely nothing going on there. Two great, hard-working parents that wanted nothing but good for me. And did everything that they could to help me and, you know, get me started and support me. There's no drama there, you know. But when I got sober, and where I got sober, and when I started making meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous, there was a lot of talk about the reasons why we drank. Now, I don't know if you all still do that. It's a bunch of a long time ago for me, but there was reasons why I drank. And I sat. Now, you know, when I came into the rooms, I was pretty banged up. I had tried for a long, long time on my own to stop. Long time. And failed miserably. You know, I come to find that we're great at stopping. We're just not too good at staying stopped. But, you know, and that was my story. And I struggled, and I struggled, and I struggled, you know. And I just failed and failed and failed. And I didn't get the alcohol thing. You see, I had some experience with non-conference-approved substances. And I was able to, you know, not do that. But, you know, when it came to alcohol, I just repeatedly failed. And so when I started making meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous and the Fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous, I got to listen to a lot of people talk about why they drank. And I was a newcomer, and I thought that that's what you did. You know, you figured out the reasons why you drank. And so I said, yeah, you know, there were reasons why I drank. I was the only Italian kid in an Irish neighborhood. They all had brothers, and I had sisters. Their fathers worked for the city. My father worked in a garment industry. There weren't very good reasons, you know. And there was evidence. There was evidence of my past, you know. And indeed, there was a path of destruction that had laid out in my past before I'd come to the Fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous. And so, you know, I figured I'd fit in. And I was just one of those guys that was dumb lucky enough. I had gotten a guy that was 18 years sober, a day at a time, still made a meeting every day, and he yoked me, and he told me the meetings that I was going to go to, And he gave me his phone number. I was a little suspect of that. Where I came from, I didn't communicate well, and I for sure didn't want to talk to strangers, and I didn't know what this guy wanted, and why did he want to talk to me? More importantly, why did he want me to call him? So needless to say, that didn't occur, but I would see him at another meeting, and he would chat with me for a little bit, and I'd see him at another meeting, and he would chat with me for a little bit, and you know, and I was like figuring this thing out. Like, you know, you all, you know, you come here every day, you sit in the front of the room and you talk about what's going on, and you talk about like how terrible things are at home or how terrible things are at work if you have a job, and you know, and you get through the hour, and then maybe if you're not feeling good, you go to another meeting and get through another hour. And then you get to look forward to the meeting tomorrow, because then I get to talk about how bad tomorrow's going to be. And I love this man to death. You know, he's a legend for me. But, you know, and he sat with me, and he talked to me, and he explained to me about making meetings. Indeed, taught me how to tell time, you know, because the meeting, I had to be here a half hour before the meeting began. And I was never anywhere on time, you know. You know, he taught me some real basic things. And he taught me, and I got to tell you, it was in my first week, 2 weeks, you know, he had the God conversation with me. And, or maybe you all don't know what the God conversation is. So, you know, he asked me if I had a God. And I said, yeah. And he said, no, not you. Do you have a God? Do you know that you are not God? And I said, yeah. You know, and the truth of the matter was, I did believe that. You know, there was a significant amount of evidence in my past that I had been kept alive for a reason. You know, having guns to my head, being shot at, and begging for a belt to tie my leg off after my femoral artery had been severed, led me to believe that I had been kept alive for a reason, not knowing what it was. It's important to note that on every one of those occasions, alcohol was involved. You see, and there was a time I hadn't drank for 7 years. And when I turned 8 years old, my grandfather... My grandfather made this wine, you know, and I just had a little bit of my grandfather's wine. And it just made me feel better. You know, I'd love to tell you what, you know, better is, but for me, all my life, the world was just a difficult place for me to be. I don't know if you identify with that, but it wasn't like getting up in the morning and yay, it was like getting up in the morning and whoa. And I was at 8 years old. And it made me feel better. And so it just made me feel better all the time from then on. I didn't drink daily when I was 8 years old. But I'll tell you that every time I had access to alcohol, sure. And when I was old enough and when I was a teenager, yeah, it was a regular occurrence. As evidenced by the three schools, well, two schools that I was asked to leave, and the third school that just flat out got an order of protection. You know, and I wasn't a bad kid. You know, and now I'd probably have initials after my name and be given, you know, medication or something. The truth of the matter was, there was just something going on inside me. I was just never comfortable no matter where I was. And it was a lot like that with my drinking. It didn't matter how much money I had. Because there was times when I had tons of cash, and there was times when I was broke. And it never affected the way I drank. I drank the same. You see, I always thought it was about something out there. And so I always tried to make out there look okay. The truth of the matter was, out there was always fine. It was in here what was making me crazy. And so, you know, it was just that way for me. And And as I got older, it just continued. And so when I came to the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous, it wasn't because it was a good idea. It wasn't because, you know, somebody said, you need help. Or I had made a fool out of myself at a wedding. There was just nowhere else for me to go. Doing what I was doing for a living, I couldn't disappear and say, oh, I got to go to this. You just don't disappear for 5 days or 7 days. And I wasn't allowed to be an alcoholic or a drug addict. And so I came here, you know, and I met Davey. And Davey taught me about the fellowship and taught me about making meetings and taught me about God. And he had the other conversation. The end of that conversation went something like, don't ever forget what I'm going to say, because there is going to come that time when I won't be around. There will be no meeting to go to, and that God will keep you sober. That is the only thing that will come between you and your drink is your God. Yeah, right. I know how to do this. You come here, you sit down, you talk, you tell them what's going on, you throw the buck, you drink the coffee, say the prayer, I'll see you later. He said, listen to me. I'm serious now. He said, I'm telling you, don't ever forget this. And he says, if you're having a problem with your God, he says, just think of it like this. Think of the good orderly direction that you get from the 12 steps. Make your God the group of drunks. Make your God that meeting that you're going to go to. And then one of the greatest hustles in Alcoholics Anonymous. Listen carefully, because somebody in that meeting is going to tell you something that you need to hear. Did y'all ever use that on your sponsees? I just love that. Because inevitably there's somebody there, a newcomer, is going to listen to and say, oh my God, I can't believe it. That guy, like, he was speaking right to me. It's like, of course he was. My buddy Joey, when he was getting sober, he swore that I put plants in meetings. I would ask him what meeting he was going to, and he was convinced. He says, you did it again, didn't you? They were there just to talk to him. All right, Joe. And I made meetings, and I made a lot of meetings. And I did everything I was asked to do. I didn't know what else to do. You know, I was, and the funny thing about that was, years away from alcohol, I was every bit as insane as I was the day before I walked through the door. I spoke better. You know, my breath cleared up. I even spoke better. But inside, I was every bit as crazy as I was the day before I walked through the door. And I had nothing to get peace. You see, alcohol for me made it easier. And I had nothing, you know, to get that from. And I was given the rules, you know, the rules of, well, back then we got the rules of, you know, when you get sober, you make a meeting every day. I thought this was a professional diagnosis, by the way. I wasn't too bent when I got here. You know, I listened to some lady saying how she was making 4 meetings a day, and I figured, oh my God, she must really be sick if she's got to go 4 times a day. Me, she's a lot worse than me. I only got to go once, he said. Meeting a day, people, places, and things, service. No relationships. Come early, stay late, back up. What's the thing with the relationships again? No relationships. He says, you're married. What's the big deal? I said, not the point. Not the point. Tell me, is this like no relationships with the girls in Alcoholics Anonymous? Like, no, what do you mean? Like, whoa, what the, with the no relationship thing, what's? And so I, you know, because I followed direction, was that me? I couldn't resist. And so I figured, okay, I'm figuring like no new relationships. So it's like, you know, the wife and the girlfriend is okay. Don't judge. Don't judge. For an Italian where I come from, that's monogamy. No, it's true. It's true. And I wasn't cheating unless I had somebody behind my gumata's back. That was... Don't hate. So I heeded his advice. And I did what I was asked to do, you know, for the most part. And I made a lot of meetings. A lot of meetings. And we were taught to make step meetings and learn about the steps. And I made a lot of step meetings. And, you know, and then we, like, Sunday nights were like, that was considered your night off so you could go to an open meeting. Okay. And I'm years away from alcohol. Literally, years away from alcohol. Insane, crazy. And I watched some guys that had come in behind me, and I watched them struggle to put down alcohol. And then after a period of time, you know, I looked at the same guys, and I saw them, and they were exhibiting a peace and ease that I had never experienced. And they were talking about something in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous that I had not heard before. They were talking about the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I'm here to tell you that I'm really glad you're here, and we're going to experience the fellowship tonight, and maybe we'll have some fun. This has absolutely nothing to do with your recovery. I'm here to tell you that until you can get a sponsor that can teach you and read to you those first 164 pages of our basic text, you're just going to stay in the fellowship. I hope you don't struggle the way that I did. I came to the program of Alcoholics Anonymous after two felony arrests for aggravated assault and what the fellowship called sobriety. You know, because I didn't drink. I got sober in a place where, you know, I'd listen to guys outside a meeting talking about how they gambled their paychecks, how they were in trouble for beating their wives, how they had done this and how they'd done the other thing. They'd walk inside and say, you know, I didn't drink today. I had a good day. Now, as twisted as I am, I'm saying, I know this is wrong. I know there's something wrong with this picture. I'm better off doing what I used to do. I can't live like that. There was no option. And then these guys started coming around, and they started talking about something different. They started talking about a God of their understanding. They started talking about a peace that they had not before experienced. And I could identify that because I still hadn't experienced that peace. And I didn't know what they had. I for sure enjoyed watching them because the old-timers were getting really pissed off, and I just loved watching them, you know, go at it. Complete libertarian. I don't care what you do. If it works for you, keep doing it. And these guys were just pissing everybody off. Now, way too full of pride and ego to ask for help, I continued to suffer. And they continued to get better. And these same guys that couldn't stay sober and couldn't put alcohol down, all of a sudden, a few months later, were living their life with a dignity and peace that I had not experienced. And I'm years away from alcohol. So I watched and I listened. And they stayed sober, and they began working with other alcoholics. And way too full of pride and ego to ask for help. I later went and got some CDs from Joe and Charlie, whom we know and love. And then later sat down with another alcoholic, and then came to the sponsor that I'm with today. And it wasn't until that point that I realized that I learned about my first step. And I learned that I didn't take my first step in a room of Alcoholics Anonymous when they asked me about the damage that I had occurred, you know, and about the powerlessness and what I did before I got here. I learned that my first step in Alcoholics Anonymous came when I stood and I looked up at my wife on the balcony after my last bender, and I just cried and begged her forgiveness because I had to admit to her, myself, and my God that I had failed and I could not succeed. That left to my own devices, I could not succeed. I would fail. That was my first step. It was before I had come to the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. You see, what made me an alcoholic wasn't the fact that I had destroyed my life and the lives around me, that I had left my infant daughter to leave her because I had exhibited some behavior that forced me to have to leave New York. That didn't make me an alcoholic. What made me an alcoholic was the fact that when I started, I couldn't stop. Now, I don't hear that in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous today. Keep coming back. No, stay. I'm going to tell you newcomers a secret. All these people here that you're like really pissed off because they get the good seats every week. Don't feel bad. I sit back there every time I come. They're here to share this gift with you. That's the only reason why they're here. That's the only reason why they're here. So if you're sitting in this room right now, you don't ever have to drink again. It's not a maybe. It's not kinda, sorta. It's not keep coming back. I'm telling you, it's bulletproof. There are people that are sitting in this room right here, right now, that are willing to spend their time with you so that you don't ever have to drink again. Powerful words. If you come to my home group, which many people here have, and you're all welcome to Victory Group in Staten Island on a Sunday, there is no passport required at the Verrazano. You will regularly hear about us talk about the miracle that's available to you. We will promise you a miracle. Not because of, who we are, because that's our birthright as a fellowship. That's your birthright. If you're not living a completely amazing life, you missed it. Go back and start over. That's what's available to us. Not to struggle and get through a day. It's no fun. What's available to us is an abundant life. Cool. And so I learned that my powerlessness wasn't about what I did. It wasn't about where I grew up. It wasn't about the fact that I'm an only Italian son. Yes, you are in the presence of royalty. Those are the Italians. The one growling in the back is the Italian daughter. That's not why I drank. I drank because I was just ill-suited for this life without alcohol. It made everything easier for me. Until I learned that there was just maybe a God that could help me. And I'm just one of those people who was dumb lucky enough to get here with a God. I got to tell you, I had nothing to do with it. You know, he just smiled on me, and I knew that I was being kept alive for a reason. You know, and in three, I just had to say, okay. You know, I'm willing. You know, when Mikey and Aviva did a great job. Thank you, Mikey was talking about four, and five, giving that all up to another human being, and my God, and coming completely honest with the fact that. Yeah, I am the root of my problem. You know, the interesting part about that is I still have my problem. And what really grabbed me about this part of the work was when I would read about how my alcoholism was but a symptom. You see, when I came to the Fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous, I entered the race to stay away from alcohol longer than you. Because that's what we were taught. Just don't drink today. You know, can you get through the day? I don't know. Can you get to a meeting? Yeah. Or hang out with somebody? Okay. And what I realized, there were several other symptoms to my spiritual malady. You see, so, yeah, there are a lot of things that I use to fill this void. Alcohol was but a symptom. And so if I was going to experience the sense of peace and ease that those before me had taught me, I needed to carry on with the rest of this work. And I have six and seven because, you know what? I don't get it right all the time. You know? I don't. And in eight and nine, you know, when I need that push, in eight and nine, to make that list and clean it all up. You know, I had a spirited discussion with my sponsor tonight who's sitting here, and he's one of those guys I talked about that came into the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous when it was, like, before people were talking about the program recovery. When I work with newcomers today, I'm going to hasten to add, when I work with newcomers today and when they're done, when we get to the 12th step, I beg of them to have the courage to be disliked. I beg of them to have the courage to be unpopular, you know, to be able to stand up in front of a room of meeting makers and share their truth, no matter where you are, no matter what meeting they're in, because ultimately someone's life is going to depend on that. And that was the example that was set forth for me. You know, and the funny thing about nine was, you know, I was working, I was working with a newcomer, you know, I guess it was just about a few years ago, and it occurred to me that there was something that I had done in early recovery that, you know, I was like, oh my God, you know, and here I am, it's 20 years later, I'm a pillar of my community. Just goes to show you what can happen. I turned into the guy I made fun of all my life, is really what happened. You know. And I had to call these guys that, long story short, I had appropriated some construction materials from another business that I hadn't paid for. Listen, when I got sober, they told you, you know, if you're a bank robber, you'll be a better bank robber. If you're a horse thief, you'll be a better horse thief. Anyway, so I called these guys, and I had, you know, now, I got to tell you, you know, I would have loved to have sent them a check anonymously or, you know, in a close an anonymous letter, but, you know, we don't get to do that. And I had to call these guys that knew of me before the transformation, and it was really funny because now they're older. One of them since passed, and I said, you know, I got to talk to Don, and he said, who is it? And I told him, and the door opened, I looked, and come back tomorrow, and I come back tomorrow. He says, you know, I'll meet you out here, and here's his brother. Here's three guys standing around like I'm going to do something. I'm like, no, you don't understand. And I had to clean it up. And I said, you know what? Whatever it is, it is. And they looked at me like, and it was a beautiful experience for them. It was a beautiful experience for me, too. And I was able to do that because I had no fear. I was able to do that because I had a God in my life that makes all of those things possible for me, that allows me to walk into those situations void of pride and ego, just with the knowledge that he's there to support me and that it's going to be okay. And I don't know what okay is. I know that he knows what okay is. And in 10, I get to keep myself honest, sometimes better than others, you know. And the interesting thing about 10, when you read 10, it talks about how he ceases fighting everyone or everything. I don't know about you. That just doesn't come easy for me. Just one of them damn character defects. And it's a whole lot better than it was. But anyone, anything? Yeah, anyone, anything. Because if I don't cease fighting with them, I begin fighting with alcohol. And you know, it talks about how it can go everywhere that free men can go, you know. And in 11, I got to maintain my conscious contact with my God. I don't get to live this life without his help, because ultimately it's all on loan from him. You know, I'm just the guy that had a pickup truck 15 years ago that's probably in the top 10 of my field in the city of New York. And I got to tell you, I have very little to do with that. You know, it has everything to do with what you all taught me. You see, because my 12 step, you know, here it talks about working with alcoholics, but it talks about what I was taught was it talks about this work, not my opinion, not what I think. It talks about doing this work with other alcoholics. And indeed, the first, when it was originally written, it said this work with others, especially alcoholics. So my recovery in 12 stops being about me. My recovery in 12 starts being about you, starts being about my loved ones, my family, my community, my employers and my employees. I'm just a conduit. I've had the gift. I've gotten the gift. It's my job to share it. It's their job to share it. The guys with the keys on the seats, that's what they're here for. They're here to share this gift with you. So I'm here to tell you that, you know, one of the greatest gifts I ever received, you know, I was at the Bill Wilson, and you all are as handsome on a Tuesday as you are on a Saturday, by the way. All you women, every bit as beautiful on a Tuesday. Thank you. One of the greatest gifts I've ever received was to have when I watched the people that I worked with work with others, and I got to watch the bulb, light bulb go off in their sponsees, in their sponsees, sponsees. And I got to tell you, we stood on Saturday night and we took a picture of four generations of us standing in the front of the room. And I got to tell you, I was never more happy in all my life. And I just want to tell you, thank you very much for giving me this opportunity. And I still have a resentment. Time out, time out, time out. I'm coming for the lineup next week because I got beat. I want you all to know that. Thank you very much.